What's good, Internet? It is your Super GG Radio host, Alex, here to give a brief announcement. This week, we attempted something different by having a live episode. Unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, we have since lost the last 5 minutes of audio. Unfortunately, we don't have an alternative or backup of the audio, so the episode is posting as is. Our apologies from Super GG Radio, and hope that we have the technical issues figured out by next week. Thank you, and enjoy the episode. What's good, Internet, and welcome to Session 72 of Super GG Radio, where friends chat about video games and all things adjacent. I am your host in Dynasty... I don't like Dynasty Warriors. I don't like Dynasty. I am your Dynasty Warrior, Alex Arona. Oh, that's... No, that's
bam.
Yep. Back with us this week, fresh from his vacation, Joel DeWitt. All right, Joel, who's your favorite Dynasty Warrior character?
I never played that trash. Is Sekiro a Dynasty Warrior?
Nope. All right, Getty, you're probably the only one who plays Dynasty Warriors. I know you wrote this opening. Who is your favorite Dynasty Warrior character? And I'll pretend to care.
Oh, man, it's Zangief because he had Wolverine claws for his weapons.
Okay.
He would slice around the battlefield.
That's kind of legit. All right. Well, this week we have some tight betas and early adopters. Check out the news and then have Joel Blind walk us through the backlog blog. But first, early adopters, where we play alphas, betas, and games that were on Stream Demo Bonanza. I think that means Steam Demo Bonanza. That's the Steam Festival.
I don't know what it's called. I just come up with the shit that you say.
That was an errant R.
Yeah, that was an errant R. First game, Fights in Tight Spaces. If you guys have not seen Fights in Tight Spaces, it is a grid system. It's almost like a board game. What was the game from the people who did FTL? What?
Oh.
I don't know, but the same people that did Into the Breach, right?
Yes. Okay, Into the Breach. Okay. So imagine Into the Breach, but you are a man, and you move around this grid fighting people in a small room, but the way you fight them is a card game. So you get these cards. Yes. It'll show up cards at the bottom. You get like 5 cards, and you can choose move forward, throw someone against a wall, switch places with them, punch them, or like, you know, low blow them or trip them. And each thing affects them on the board. So you can move your character, slam one guy into a wall, turn around, and stun one guy by chopping him in the throat, and then move another space. And then you've used 4 cards, and that's the end of your turn.
Like, how many guys would you fight in a normal encounter?
I went through a couple of them. I think I did 5 or 6 different matches, and I think it upwards up to 4 people. It's tight. It's a fight in tight spaces. So the spaces were tight. The game was tight, and using those cards was a lot of fun. It definitely flipped the mechanics on its head because you loved the Spire.
Slay the Spire. I already said it once, so
yeah,
it's that card the deck building battlers, man.
But it's so cool to add that to something like a board game, you know, where you're moving these pieces around, and it kind of looks a lot of fun because if you watch yourself, you're doing cool moves as this little almost stick figure esque character, just fighting around these little spaces. So
this kind of looked like super hot to me.
Like a top.
It does have that sort of dark white, black, red color,
yeah.
Chromatic, like monochromatic kind of look to it, right? And that definitely helps for the sort of style that it's going to, which seems like a coolish, like action fight sequence thing going on. Alex, when it comes to like the gameplay itself, again, you mentioned that there are turns. Is there like a power meter that you have? A resource like a mana pool that you draw down from, like you do in most card games? You know, what's the win or lose state in a match? Can you go into that a little bit?
So you do have a mana pool. Each card can take up points of that. I believe you had 5 points. Some of the more powerful attacks were 2 points. So those cards would have a number at the top. Some were just 0, so they were just free play. So with that, you had to, you know, gauge what you were going to do. If you had an attack that was going to do 3 damage to a guy, and I believe you could tell their HP, so you end up getting like, okay, this guy's got 3 HP, I can knock him out with 1 hit, but that card costs 2 points, then I also don't want to be close to anybody else, so you have to kind of maneuver yourself to take out one person and then keep moving away from the rest of them, or find ways to, like, there's a shove move where it just moves a person one space. But if someone was behind them, I could shove that person, hit, do damage to both, and then, you know, step away.
Okay, so it's usually like a 1v many people kind of situation going on.
That's why I kind of thought it was interesting, because it like, there was a game that came out a while ago, I think last year, called it was the John Wick game. It was just the John Wick game. But in that, they were trying to give you the idea that you're this superhuman John Wick character, but it's turn-based. It's like a turn-based RPG. And then after everything was done, they kind of sped it up to make it look like you were doing it in one fluid motion, like Super Hot. But it was so awkward looking. It didn't look and feel like you were doing anything cool. It actually looked like you were walking awkward at awkward angles, and it just didn't look good. So this, for me, is where I kind of fit that, is that it does make you feel like you're this John Wick character being surrounded by 5 guys and being able to take them out in a very rapid succession.
That sounds pretty slick.
Yeah, it sounds like it has a couple of mechanics from other card battlers or deck builders or whatever you want to call them that I've played recently. So you guys remember Nowhere Prophet? It had that grid-based system so that whenever you'd place your characters on the map, you had cards that you would use, and like your, I think your leadership or your, yeah, I think your leadership cards, you could push objects or you could push people out of the way so they wouldn't be able to attack you. So that's kind of nifty. And then I did pick up Griftlands, and I've been playing that casually on and off. And I don't know, I think, so this game, Alex, it's mainly just fighting from room to room. There's no story beats or anything that drives you.
No, not that I could tell.
Okay.
The
I kind of would want to see something like that to make the game at least more three-dimensional. As silly as it sounds, like Slay the Spire is probably the least story-driven out of all those games that I've played.
Mm-hmm.
But if this one, I feel like it needs a little something to jazz it up.
Okay. Yeah, no, in this case, it seemed more of a the puzzle rooms. So I would try to go through, and whenever I beat a room, but I got hit twice, and I said, well, no. So let's play that one again. I have to get a perfect run. And that's kind of where I think that this game does a really good job, is because it's a demo, and with demos and beta tests that we play, I kind of try to knock those out and try to, okay, I'm going to, you know, go through an hour and kind of get through this. But this one I kind of went back to and said, well, how can I make this better? How can I do better on this next one? And that kind of made me think that, okay, maybe this is something that might be special, because it had that replayability. It had that try again, try harder. Let's try to go through without getting hit.
I'm excited that you're actually picking up on a game like this. All these games are really based around economy. You have to be able to manage your resources to make sure that you can make it to the next room or to make it to the next phase in order to succeed.
Yeah, and they're not usually my jam.
It does show you how important theme is in some of these, or the conceit. So, like, a lot of these games, like we know Getty, you know, you're a summoner or a spellcaster, and you are playing out on the battlefield. And the way that this one seems to sort of put it down to more microcosm sort of scenery, where it's more like you're playing out an action sequence from a movie. It really is a neat way to twist the convention of the card battler game. And to your point, I kind of agree, Daddy, too, that hopefully when they're working on this game, they're also considering how they can build a narrative through it, because it totally feels like something that you could turn it into, like, pretty by the numbers action movie story that just gives you just the faintest bit amount of rationale to sort of compel you forward. The tiny bit of narrative that would work with some decent writing could really like help spur you forward and really want you to keep going.
Yeah. Or at least try and create something that is going to catch my attention. I like those games for the story.
Okay.
Yeah, as silly as it sounds, I like You know, Nowhere Prophet had a really deep story, at least from a couple of perspectives. And Griftlands is very heavily embedded in story. Like, and the playthrough that you do, I've only probably attempted it 4 or 5 times. It has, like, all of these beats that you need to hit each time in order to progress the story. So, that's exciting.
No, yeah, I have now wishlisted that on Steam because with those kinds of games, and it's like, oh, it's a puzzle. You can do a puzzle here, puzzle there. Of course, I'm going to say perfect on Switch, but what isn't right?
Everything's perfect on Switch because you don't have to be sitting in front of a computer or television.
Hey, I'm playing Paper Mario 1, and I'm sitting here wishing it was on Switch.
Yeah, there you go. Just get the new one next week, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. If I'm playing Paper Mario 1.
Origami Mario?
It ain't great. Okay. That was Fights in Tight Spaces. Next, Joel, you played Dandara. Is that correct?
I did play sort of the opening hours of Dandara. Dandara is, and I forget, was this the beta or was it the full release by now?
I believe you got the full release.
Okay. Nice. So Dandara is a 2D platformer, and it is, have either of you guys played VVV before?
No.
Yes. But not a lot of
so
it.
It's yeah, I mean, I'm only going to use the faintest bit of comparison, but VVV has a similar DNA with it in that the platforming has a lot to do with sort of changing the orientation of where you're standing on the walls. So, like, think about your typical 2D, say, like, Metroid level. You know, it's usually, like, corridors and stuff. Mm-hmm. But instead, you can sort of do a move, and then you're suddenly standing on the ceiling and walking along that way. Dandara is actually the main character of the story, which at the start they give the pretty loose sort of summary of the sort of utopian world, things going to chaos, and then suddenly Dandara is awakened to be sort of the savior of it. And she is this character with the power to be able to sort of point in a direction, and then you hit the A button, and then if there's a sliver of ground on that part of the land that's sort of a silverish white color, mm-hmm. you can then sort of zip over there and then be standing on that platform, whether it is upside down, on the side walls, or on the main floor itself. So you are going through these kind of typical zones that you'd see in most sort of like Metroid-like games. You know, and you're going through these phases where you're having to find the key or item or story sequence to unlock the next area. And that is the main mode of transportation. You can't actually walk left or right at all. Your movement is solely that ability of pointing your stick at a location you want to go to. It'll give you sort of like a line of sight with the cursor of where it's going to land at, mm-hmm. and then shooting to there. And that's how you travel from each part of the zones.
Well, that sounds like it takes a while to do, but how quickly are you able to move like that?
Surprisingly quickly. Okay. And, you know, so it's if you get nimble enough about it, you can be really sort of like you zip up to one spot, you zip back down to the next portion of the zone you're in, and you're sort of bouncing back and forth. But it's kind of fraught with danger because really when you're doing that, the enemies are a lot of them so far have been things like these sequences of walls that sort of show up with hit spots, but they don't appear until you've moved to a zone nearby it. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to zip back and forth too quickly in a place that you haven't been before, you could be opening yourself to sort of just bumping into an enemy that takes damage and hurts you, right? And then there are also other more typical enemies, like ones that walk along and shoot projectiles at you or try to fly around you. Leave the clock alone.
Well, Joel, I got some. Is it disorienting with that kind of traversal?
So I wouldn't call it disorienting because it's not changing your view. So like if you're going upside down, it's not shifting the camera around to try to turn things around. So it and the movement left, right, up, down is all sort of the same. And since and probably because you can't freely move on your own, you have to point and aim and then sort of shoot your jump for each jump. It sort of forces a pause. Even if you're trying to do it in quick succession, it's a tiniest bit of pause, and you're just sort of zipping up and down and up and down and maybe to the side over there. And it's just stunted enough to where I didn't find anything disorienting about it. She also has like a projectile thing, which is her main mode of attack. So like it almost kind of looks like in like the animes when they're charging a shot or something like that out of their hands, like a fire blast or something like that. And then it's like a three fire shot. Blast. Yeah.
Kamehameha.
What?
Yeah.
You know, that is a brand name, and I'm not sure that we have the licensing for that yet.
You don't know who we are?
Hashtag ad. Hashtag ad.
We're sponsored by, Alex, who are we sponsored by?
The 2020 Olympic Games.
Costco brand, not White Claw. There we go.
Oh, is that, that's what we got?
That's what we got.
I'm still trying to hold out for Costco brand rum.
We're not even good enough to get MeUndies yet.
Hey, I feel like if we really tried. Do you have any other attacks that you can use, Joel, or is it just the...
I haven't found any yet. Okay. The stylist game, I suspect it's going to open up, and I'd really love to revisit this a little bit later, either in a week or two, because I get the sense this is the kind of game I could really get into. Like the Metroidvania stuff, it is so, there's so many of them now, right? And varying different qualities, but a lot of them sort of go towards the same thing, which is like, I want to be a lot like Symphony of the Night, but I'm gonna just like change a tiny bit, or I can't quite emulate it. And the way that this one's movement works, like it is unique enough to where when I first started playing it, I was like, this could get annoying, but actually I kind of found it really sort of a great way to sort of force a slower pace and like take measured approaches, because there are even sections where so far where like spikes will start appearing and environmental hazards. And so it becomes like a more strictly platforming task, but it becomes like partially timing and rhythm based due to that. So I'm curious to see where it goes and how it keeps itself feeling fresh and different in different sections without making it too tough.
Okay. That, yeah, I feel like there's a lot to explore there. The artwork is really nice. It does remind me of something like, almost like a little bit of a pixel, because it's not full pixel art, but it does kind of remind me of something like, almost like an invisible ink, but pixelated a little bit. Not invisible ink, indivisible. A little bit.
Okay. Yeah, it is a little more on the pixelated side, but it's, like you said, it's not going for the pixel bit kind of look. I mean, they're trying to create a cohesive art style with that animation style. And the character model looks really nice. She flows really well. She has kind of a scarf that helps add kind of a feeling of movement as she's zipping along too. Those little details are really nice. And the music also sets a nice sort of tone. So like the sections I've been in so far have been very kind of calm, maybe somber is not quite the right word, but sort of that subtle downtone music. And you're through these areas that feel more like caves than anything. So it fits things thematically so far, and I'm interested to see how much the environment changes as I go on and how well they match the art and music with that.
Okay, because yeah, that seems like a pretty rich world to explore, especially with how much art I've seen of this game so far. I have been staring this game down for a little bit, kind of waiting, because I wanted to hear what your opinion on it was before I kind of started stepping into it myself. So,
I think it's really neat. And final thing I'll mention here as a positive, it runs on our laptop, which is not meant to play video games. So, another big boon for me.
It's a low cost of entry as far as you know, processing power is concerned, but still gives you that Metroidvania challenge. That's the only thing I was worried about was the mobility and the way you kind of move, but I think you might have sold me on Dandara.
I think if you get used to it, it really feels good once you get oriented with what they're going for.
Okay. That is Dandara. Thanks for bringing that to the table, Joel. Mm-hmm. And Getty, everybody knows knife versus bat. Joel, knife versus bat, go.
Bat.
Getty.
Bat.
You guys are stupid. It's always knife. It's always knife. It's always
You'll
knife.
Never close the gap.
I will always close the gap.
I will smash the hand before it gets halfway up the mat length.
We've just had two this games about fighting. I'm going to take a break, and I will fight you both. Let's be right back. And we're back with the news. I like this one.
Yeah. I like how it stopped you. Like you looked at it and you're like,
I was like, do I want to read this or do I want to have Getty read this?
This is a courtesy of Lisa. So,
okay. Hey news. Is your name John? Because I haven't seen a around here before. You can't see me.
You know what the worst part is?
What's the worst part?
She got this little like vinyl pop. She got a vinyl pop of John Cena, and it's clear. And she'll hide it around the house.
You can't see him.
No, you can't.
Nope.
It's an awful Easter egg.
Yeah. I'll just be like trying to do the dishes, or I'll like try and put a plate on top of another plate, and then there he'll be there. And I'll be like, oh shit. Well, great.
How'd that get there? Weird.
Yeah.
Okay, first piece of news, super hot. Super hot. Super hot. Mind Control Delete, a sequel. Is it a sequel, Joel?
I don't think it's a sequel. I think it's just sort of like a small add-on of some sort.
Bonus content.
Yeah, I don't think they've been too explicit about what's coming out, but I'll play more Super Hot.
Hell yeah.
Will you?
I'll beat that game again. And it's free to anybody who owned the original. So you're welcome on that, Getty.
Yeah, so thanks, Alex.
I forget the date there. Was that next week? Or it was sometime in July, I think, that they're releasing that.
That sounds right. It's relatively soon.
I can check.
Check it out, Getty.
I will.
Next piece of news. Dark Pictures, Little Hope. It finally gets a release date, October 30th.
That gets me so excited. You have no idea.
The question I have is
and I'm going to play it on Halloween.
Has that been... It's been a year, right?
It has been more than a year. Wasn't Man of Medan released like last March?
Not last March. You mean 2019 March?
Yeah, that's like last year March. Not this year March.
Yeah,
it's March.
Was it spring?
I want to say it was spring.
Okay, we probably just waited until the fall to play it then. Okay.
Yeah, because I remember playing it in the fall. The cadence at which they're releasing these Dark Picture games seems a little more spread out than I initially thought. I thought it would be 6 to 9 months.
Like every year. Yeah.
And, the whole Telltale string of games and even the Life is Strange stuff, I think it suffered from sort of like ambitious release schedules that then couldn't be met. And you don't know how much of this stuff was screwed with because of things like COVID and the hellscape that brought. But, I kind of feel like October's the right time for a release like this. Like, it's just like you expect the Halloween movies to show up or, it's just something to do once the kids go to bed.
No, I completely agree.
Night.
I think that that's but I also want to say that they decided that they were going to delay this one so that they could finagle more of the aspects of the game to meet what people expected out of it. If you remember, they got some pushback on Man of Medan and people were like, oh, I thought it was going to play more like this. So I think that they made some improvements. We'll have to see what kind of improvements they actually are because I honestly had no problem with Medan.
It was entertaining. What were people expecting? Like, were they expecting more? Because I guess as a follow-up to Until Dawn, which is honestly one of the best PlayStation 4 games in my mind, I mean, the only thing I really felt was missing, besides maybe a tighter dialogue and better acting, was some of those segments where you were sort of walking around and exploring and looking for clues or items you could pick up as you walked along. And like, there were those long sequences between story beats and Until Dawn that added more game length, but I didn't always feel like it added to the fun. So like, I can understand the frustration and lower production values, but yeah, I guess unless you're really a big collector of stuff, I don't know.
I don't think that that's my main priority when it comes to games like that. I know that the way that they did it in Medan, you tried to collect the, and even in Until Dawn, you collected the totems or the pictures to see right. What was going to happen, or to try and avoid something from happening negatively to you. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm definitely playing it on Halloween, guys. So
same.
It's going to be real scary.
Maybe we can actually plan some multiplayer sometime this time.
We still have to do the multiplayer for Medan.
Yes, we do. And now we have less of an excuse, except for your 60-hour work weeks right now.
Well, hopefully by then it'll be a lot more manageable. We'll see. We're back in the office next week.
Ooh, oh, that's crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not back until August. Okay, last piece of news. It is a light news week. Well, actually, there's two more. First one, they're updating Nintendo Switch Online. SNES gets Donkey Kong Country and NCAA wrestling game, and the NES gets Immortal. I only know Donkey Kong Country. I enjoy Donkey Kong Country, but these games are coming out at also a very slow cadence.
I do have the follow-up for Super Hot, the 16th.
The 16th.
So next week.
Yeah, 6 days.
That's just how underwhelming the Super Nintendo release.
Alex, you didn't actually just say it's 6 days from now, right? Because today's still the 9th.
Well, that tomorrow's the 10th. Yes, okay. Whatever. Whatever.
let's say a week from today.
Joel, did you like the... Are you excited for these new collections coming to Nintendo Switch Online?
I have come to find that when the stuff is a subscription, that I never touch it. By comparison, we have Netflix, Hulu, we probably still have Disney Plus. The only damn things we watch anymore are like Letterkenny, The Office, and Supermarket Sweep, since it came out this past week on Netflix. So like, I feel like it creates a situation for me where I have this whole huge list of curated games, and then you think like, wow, look at all this stuff to choose from, and then I choose none of it. So, it's the shackles of choice, right? but I think I've played Donkey Kong Country enough. I mean, part of the cool thing about Donkey Kong Country for the time was just the way it looked. It had kind of same appeal that like Mortal Kombat had, where everything looked sort of like quasi photorealistic, and the platforming itself was fine, but it was tough and unreasonably tough in some parts in my mind. So, I am curious about the other ones. I might like just pop them in to try them, but I have come to find I'm not the biggest fan of the way they've handled Virtual Console.
I still might go back for Breath of Fire.
I wouldn't hate that.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. And last piece of news, there has been a trademark and domain registered for the Tomb Raider experience for Nintendo Switch, which some thoughts are it's the older games, like a collection of, the first, four? Oh, whoops.
It's a Labo VR exclusive, like those Universal rides where you're sitting in the chair and then it shows you moving down like a track on a screen, and then you have to sort of shake the Labo like you're on the roller coaster as you're going through twists and turns.
Dear Lord, I hope that that's not real. That sounds just awful. That's almost as bad as, what was it, the Mario mustache ride?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't. What's the problem with that?
What's the problem with that?
That's completely innocuous. It's completely innocent. I don't know what you're talking about.
Something all right. I don't know if innocent is the word that I would use.
Ooh, well, it depends on how trimmed it is.
I really feel like I had some news, and now I can't remember what it was.
Well, let's...
I blame the news for not being long enough this week.
Yeah, that's fine. We got an extended backlog blog. So let's take another break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. Back with the Backlog Blog, where we play games that we already owned on another platform, but we got it on Switch. That's correct. I own the Red Strings Club elsewhere. I also own Invisible Ink elsewhere.
I feel like this should be our opening for the Backlog Blog, because half of the games that we end up talking about are just stuff that you guys repurchased on Switch.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, it's the
it's
best
the convenience console. Of it.
I want to be able to play games while ignoring my wife and the TV show she's watching.
I thought that you were going to say that you want to play games while making your wife drive 15 hours to another state.
No. She played games while I drive 15 hours to another state.
No.
That's more.
Yeah. My partner goes to bed early. So I just like, oh, I'm just going to hang out with you while you're sleeping, playing Switch. It's fine.
I like to imagine that Alex is under the covers, like with the Switch like this close to his face, and he's like,
is it the covers over his head?
Yeah.
She said I can't play too many aggressive games because it keeps her up when I'm just like, so.
I like it.
So Red Strings Club it is. I played the Red Strings Club. It is an adventure game, kind of.
That seems like a question. I don't know the answer to this, Alex.
We're in a cyberpunk world where androids are being created, robots are being created to use to help humans, and it is the future with like flying cars and shady bars. And you are several people in this adventure, but the main character, you're a bartender. Who, for some reason, and it's never really explained, he made a deal with the devil or something, he can never leave his bar. He is an information broker. People will come to him and just, like, talk to him and give him a lot of information, and then he'll hint at stuff to kind of give them information, and it goes back and forth. And the main game mechanic is you will serve them drinks that will enhance their mood.
Sounds vaguely similar to something that you played last week.
Yeah, I thought this would be like that. I thought this would be like Coffee Talk. But
you're explaining Coffee Talk to me again.
Well, this one...
Yeah.
This one you have to pick a very specific mood because it actually gives you a big dialogue tree. Like, big, massive, like... I want to say they give you, like, six to eight options where it's like...
That's a lot.
Ask him about this and ask him about that. And you get enough information to find out about this big corporation that is going to – everyone's got these enhancements that you can purchase and put in your brain. So it'll make you like, oh, I'll never be depressed again, or I want to be able to focus. And you can have these enhancements created and put in your brain, and they want to hack all of them. The corporation wants to Wi-Fi into everyone's enhancements and make everyone – just happy forever.
Oh no, okay. Is it for 5G everybody's talking about?
Yeah, I was gonna say this actually sounds a lot like the plot to what the heck is it? No, the Deus Ex, the latter Deus Ex games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's been a series I've always been meaning to go back to because I hear such great things about, but it's a first-person shooter, so that hates me a little bit.
You don't have to play it as a shooter.
Yeah, you can just hack your way through it. But so the Red Strings Club, it's a good adventure game, and I like having these conversations because it's a word puzzle to figure out how you can get the information you need to alter the next story beat. Because there are a lot of times later on where your character, like a friend of your character, will be like, "Hey, I don't know how to get past this guard. Is there anything I can do?" And if you had the right conversation, you have an answer to work around that problem. If you don't, they kind of get screwed, and the story goes that character got screwed or something like that. You can get a lot of bad endings with different people just like, oh, he got busted, he died because you didn't ask this person the right question when you gave him a depressed drink.
That just would make me feel really bad about the decisions I made. Whatever happened to the days where people would go into a bar and they would just ask for a drink, and they weren't like, "Hey, bartender, figure out what's going to make me depressed."
Now, there's one lady who just, like, give me the horny drink, and you're like, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It's messed up.
Are you like, "Hey, baby, here's a double."
She's seriously, like, laying on the bar, and you're like, we're cool now. You can go. You can go.
How are the graphics on this? I thought they were mildly pixelated.
It's very pixelated, yeah.
Okay,
it's
not that graphic.
Yes. But, yeah, there...
Pixelated cleavage.
Yeah, there is a lot of pixelated... But it's... So... it's a relatively short indie story-based game, adventure game, mostly based on the idea of you trying to make these drinks. And I enjoyed it. I like that story, and it does portray two gay protagonists who are very, like, it's a matter of fact, it never really is brought up. It's just, that's what it is, that's the story, and I kind of like that idea, that it's like, there's no weirdness about it, or there's no one points it out. It's just, that's the way the characters are. But I have a problem with games. Like, I like, okay, give me three options and let's go through those options. One's a good option, one's kind of the bad option, one's the middle ground. When it comes to giving me eight options, I am overwhelmed and I feel very uncomfortable with how many ways I can fail this situation.
Yep, that sounds about right.
And
it's very Fallout.
Yeah. And then on top of that, though, the way to, like, when you get that piece of information, you don't know what you're supposed to do with it or even why you need it. So it feels like the game asks a lot of you without explaining a lot and then just kind of hoping that you can figure it out blindly. I went through, I think, the first half, and then I just kind of was so, like, flustered with it because I'm like, I don't know why I'm asking these questions. What am I going to use this information? What am I supposed to – which one does what? So I end up using a guide, and it made it clear, but it didn't even that. The guide's like, ask this question. I'm like, why would I ever ask that? But I did it, and then I got information. It says, you got this information. And I'm like, why did I need that?
That's very adventure game, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially those older style adventure games. It's like these puzzles that there is some sort of logic that was come up with at the time, you know, and somebody making the game thought it made sense. But as the user, you're like, okay, why the hell was I supposed to know to look under the floorboards of the dining room to find the skeleton key that would open the shed out back so I could find Merlin's treasure or something like that? You know, it's just these weird abstract puzzles that don't make sense unless you had the foresight of developing them. But I guess the one thing I might ask you is, does it feel like... Because a lot of these games feel like they're meant to be replayed a few times, so you take a chance on certain dialogue choices, do your run, see what works and what didn't, and then going through again. Does it feel like this is set up for like multiple playthroughs?
It does feel like it's set up for multiple playthroughs. The problem I have with that as a – and it, I almost guarantee that's why, and that's kind of what they want you to do. At the end, they kind of reference the fact that this is only one of many ways the story could have gone. But the story was relatively short, and it really kind of fell into, like, three acts that were very uneven. Like, the first act is finding out, like you're an android and you are doing this thing. And then the second act is the whole... like, I want to say 50% of the game, which is just person comes into bar, here's a long string of conversations. Person comes into the bar, whole string of conversations. And it goes through, like, I want to say, like six people. And these conversations are long, and again, 8 to 10 dialogue choices and just going. And then the last act is your friend hacking the corporation, and whatever you have found out from the second act will give you the answers to take down the corporation or not. It just felt so disjointed and uneven to me that like, oh, multiple playthroughs, but I got like, okay, so there's six characters, eight choices each, and then that fills out into three other choices each, and it just it seemed like a lot to ask for a replay for me. Like, it didn't, like, for me, the replayability is there, but it's also there what almost feels like too much. I got to play this game 17 times to get everything.
Yeah, and the other problem is that, like, a game
like... doesn't have time for that.
He has to play Persona 5 at least two more times.
Oh, God, hey, no.
At least one more time.
So, you know, I really liked Red Strings Club, and funny enough, I looked up some reviews afterwards just because I was curious, because it's a little bit of an older game. Older game as in this port came, like, almost direct from PC with... like the there was a mouse cursor. You have to use the sticks on the Switch with the mouse cursor, and it is a little wonky. It kind of played a little, you know, the port wasn't amazing, but that's fine.
Yeah,
but I looked up some older reviews, and it got really good reviews. So I'm like maybe it's just this style of game. Like, I really liked Grim Fandango, but I also was not going to play that game without kind of knowing, because adventure games are really, you know,
obtuse.
Yeah, very obtuse. So, Red Strings Club, I liked the story. I liked the characters. Even making the drinks was kind of fun, because you there was like four different types of liquor, and there's a cursor, and each bottle would move it either up, left, down, or right. So you had to kind of pour the drinks in to kind of move the cursor to where it needs to be to get like the right mood. You know, the horny lady was like upper left, but the depressed one was bottom right, you know, and you had to move the drinks around by using the different alcohol. Hmm. So it did. Yeah. But it did give you, like, again, these different options. Like, if you talk to someone when they're depressed, they're going to have a different answer for one question. But if you make them excited or anxious, if you give them the anxious drink and you ask that same question, the answer is going to be different. So there's a lot of variability there. Okay, that was Red Strings Club. Joel.
Yes.
You've been playing Invisible Ink.
I have. Port number two.
Port number two.
Yeah. Now, to be fair.
To be fair.
I did not own this one before now. So technically I'm off the hook for that.
I think you did own it.
We got it for PS Plus.
Yeah.
That doesn't count.
It does count.
If I don't remember, it doesn't count.
There's plenty of stuff that I don't remember, and everybody still holds me to be responsible for it.
If I didn't see it, right. It's new to me.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
So Invisible Ink is was a PC release, got ported to Switch this year, mm-hmm. is a XCOM-like, I guess if you want to put it, a tactical strategy game, very much in the vein of the XCOMs of the world, where you are on a board, you are in charge of a few pieces on the board, and then you have action points to be able to do your movement on the field, as well as different abilities, and you have a goal for each mission. The conceit here is that you are part of a super secret spy agency. World-altering events happen with mega corporations, very in vogue right now, and you then go try to more or less go through a series of missions to prepare yourself for like a final battle and gain resources and the like. One of the interesting parts about this, mm-hmm. to me at least, is the emphasis on stealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, XCOM, Phantom Doctrine, those couple games that I have played in this vein, you have to engage in combat. And it, you know, it depends on you getting the jump on the enemies usually, and getting sort of the first attack to get the advantage, and also position yourself to get the right percentage chance to hit right. Whereas here, you don't start out with a weapon. You start out or with a gun. You start out with like a stun gun, I guess, you know, something like that.
A taser.
Yeah. And really the purpose of each mission is the objectives, which are usually like get to a terminal and obtain something, hack something in the level, or rescue somebody, and then find an exit elevator. The enemies are really just obstacles that you have to find efficient ways around. And so part of it will be like you'll walk up to a door that's closed and you can use an action point to peek in the next room and see what's there. Mm-hmm. And that can give you a look and see if an enemy's there. And then you can observe their movement and it'll sort of tell you where the pattern's going, where they're going to be heading to next. And in that kind of situation, what you want to do is peek what they're doing. If you have enough action points and you're not in their line of sight, walk up behind them and then tase them. And then that takes them down for three turns. And if you're like standing on top of them, it's sort of you squatting on them and it pauses how many turns until they are active again. Uh-huh. Or alternatively, if you're monitoring their movements and feel like you can do so, you can try to sneak around them and get through that section without actually alerting them of your presence. And so like the levels, you're responsible for two agents at a time. And typically what you'd end up having is either choosing to like divide and conquer the different parts of the level or try to sort of double up and go the same way. And in certain sections, it benefits you to go double up because you could have a sequence where one person will peek and look, you know, then maybe if they're out of action points, you take your other agent out there, incapacitate the enemy. Then the next turn, you might send out your other agent that's not on top of the enemy to move on and like pin them down until you are ready to move on to the next section or something. There's also stuff like security cameras that sort of do the same thing of alerting people of your presence. And there is an alert monitor in the right-hand corner where after five or so turns, there's a dial that goes from like one to five, I believe, of different alert statuses. And so the longer you're in a mission, the more alert statuses increase, and then they send in like new guards, they'll re-engage cameras and sentries that you disabled, and they sort of like turn the crank on the difficulty slowly and like it's grinding against you in a really cool way. Like the game is, I am having a good time with this. And it's not a genre that I've always had a lot of success with outside of like the Fire Emblems or the Advance Wars, because some of these XCOM lights get a little bit too chancy and complicated with that. And then like in these games, if you fail a mission, you've lost an hour and it's just like you want to throw your controller on the couch and walk away. But here, the niceties of the rewind feature, which feels like it's in the same vein of Into the Breach, where you can like dial back a turn. I think each mission you can dial back five total turns. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you've gone down a rabbit hole of mistakes that sort of pinned you down, if you've got those reserved, you can do rewinds and sort of like replay the field. And the fact that it's on Switch, so it allows me to sort of like pause it where it's at. I know nobody's going to touch it while I'm gone. Go take care of chores or work, come back and pick it back up where I left off. It's sort of just hitting all the right notes for me right now.
Now, you told me when you were playing it that you were playing it on easy and normal.
Yes. So I started with easy because
easy.
Well, I honestly, like, easy was approachable. Like, it wasn't terribly challenging. And what the nice thing about it was is it allowed me to really spend time for trial and error to learn things in the game without being too punishing. Mm-hmm. And so I got deep into the game on easy, and I got through easy. And then I decided, like, well, you know, that was challenging, but it didn't really get challenging until towards the end. I wonder what normal's like. And I gotta say, like, normal is very beatable too. Like, it's challenging in that the consequences for taking too long and making mistakes are more severe, but it's not punishingly so. Mm-hmm. And again, the benefits of the stuff like the rewind really gives you that still kind of forgiveness where if you've messed up, you to be like, well, crap, I need to go back. It's like if you're playing a game of Civ and you have gone 10 turns, but then suddenly two nation states are starting to start a war with you and you're like, crap, what's the last save point? Let me go back and make that different move, you know. But I found normal plenty reasonable in difficulty, but like to anybody who is like me that struggles with these and wants to start off with something a little more forgiving that gives you the space to breathe and understand really how these systems work and how best to maneuver around the world. Like easy, I would encourage anybody to start with easy just to get acquainted with it.
Well, you've kind of I was waiting for this game on Switch as well. And you telling me that easy is a good way to kind of start does make it a little less daunting because, yeah, XCOM always kicked my ass, like, without question. So
it's supposed to.
Yeah.
You're supposed
to
feel bad about it, too. Like, when you realize that you're completely botched it and the Earth is not going to make it, like, yeah, you should feel bad. Like, you didn't do good.
Yeah, I think the percentage chance stuff that is ingrained in XCOM is probably one of my biggest complaints about that.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It's the most hateful mechanic ever. It's like, 97% chance to hit. Let's see what happens. Whiff.
right, and it is the one step too far for me in this genre. Even Phantom Doctrine, where it wasn't a percentage chance. It was like, this is the percentage amount of damage you're going to make. So like if you're behind a barrier and you're shooting, maybe you'll only do half damage instead of 100% damage. That was more transparent, but it's still, I think the removal of combat as a necessary or at least like a desirable outcome really helped this thing be elevated something greater than the sea of these games for me.
Now, how's the story?
Honestly, to me, the story is just like the threadbare, rationale for the theme and what's going on. Like there's fine dialogue, interspersed throughout each mission. But beyond that, it's just flavor text stuff. Like the story written is less important than like the experiences you have playing it. And there's little cool snippets. So like one of the neat things is that if you're playing a mission and you're out of rewinds, but you know you're completely stuck, because eventually you'll get like caught in a corner where they're holding you up. And then your next move, if you move in their line of sight and you're already in their line of sight, it'll pause and shoot you and you'll die. Instead of, if you know your next move is being boned, you can choose an option to go out like a tough guy and have an action hero, like last line quip.
Oh, really?
Before they shoot you. Yeah. Yeah. So like there's a lot of fun, kind of like clever things like that too. And some of the dialogue interspersed in the actual level is just like little hit, of stuff that adds a little flavor to it, but narrative wise I wouldn't say there's anything critically important here.
Okay I plan on giving that a shot probably soon. I think now that we're talking about it, just because it sounds so interesting.
Yeah I actually I took a break during my vacation, and now that we're talking about it again, I might need to pick it back up. So
okay,